Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me as always, Joey Galvez.
Hey, how's it going, Bill?
Good, it's going good. Tonight we have a special show for you. And on this special show, we have a guest star. And you're probably wondering who that is. And our special guest star tonight is from the Secret Wars and Beyond podcast, Sean.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. This is a Marvel podcast, right? I'm in the right place?
Yeah, no. Possibly.
We're talking about Marvel's Batman, right?
We'll find out.
We're talking about Moon Knight, right? Isn't that what you guys told me? Marvel's Batman?
Yeah, there you go.
No, thanks for having me, guys. I host a Marvel show. And so I never get to talk about DC, and I'm a big DC guy. I'm a big Bat guy, so I'm psyched to be here.
Sweet. Awesome. Great. Sweet. Great to hear it. So tonight we have some good stuff for you. We're going to do Batman number 69, Detective Comics 1002, and The Batman Who Laughs number 4. We got a topic of the week that's going to be pretty cool. And of course, we couldn't have a show without Stump the Co-host.
Hopefully this week I can get Sean over here to help me out with some of these answers.
Yeah, answer C. That's always C.
Exactly, yes. You should answer that way.
All right, we'll try it tonight.
Okay, let's get ready and head to the books.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
Our first book is Batman number 69. Your writer is Tom King. Your artist is Yannick Paquette. Your colorist, Nathan Fairburn. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Cover, Paquette and Fairburn. Variant cover, Francisco Matina. Associate editor, Brittany Holzer. Editor, Jamie S. Rich. And as always, Batman was created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. In this issue, coming out of the nightmares, Batman is figuring out what his greatest fear is. Also, we see Bane and Thomas Wayne training together, and we all have a question. And that question is, why is Bane naked so much in this book?
Oh, man. Bill, can you answer that question?
I don't have any idea. I tell what, on Twitter, Tom King explained himself and said the reason that Bane doesn't have clothing is because he spent all these years in the prison in Santa Presca and he was naked. But if you go back and look at the issues.
Yeah, he's got pants.
Yeah, he's got pants.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that entire fight, all I kept hearing is Solomon Grundy need pants. Like it was troubling, man. It was.
Oh, man.
I got to tell you, I was reading it and it stirred some things in me. I don't know if it was good or bad.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you should probably not admit that on air.
It was interesting, man. I felt like, remember those old cable boxes and you'd like scan, you'd get the scramble channel you're supposed to watch, but then all of a sudden it would go clear for 30 seconds. I felt like that's what happened in that scene.
Oh man. Yeah. This is something else.
It's a lot of power dynamics in that scene.
As this book starts out, you know, Bruce is, we've talked about this before in a previous episode that we thought his nightmares weren't so nightmarish, and he seemed to be coming out of these nightmares. Uh-huh. And we really find out a lot of things in this book.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have Batman asking Selina to dance through the whole issue. There's different dances, different costumes. I guess he's talking to Selina, and you get an explanation of exactly what's going on. What did you all think of the explanation that we got?
I thought that part was pretty cool. I mean, I agree with you guys from your last episode that the Nightmares arc has gone on a little too long, especially when you add in the two-part, you know, crossover, the Flash crossover, four-part crossover. But this issue made it worth it for me. This issue, I love the way that Bruce sort of comes to clarity and is like, hey, I've trained my, like, I'm so well trained, I've even trained my subconscious to tell me when I'm under the influence of like a, you know, the scarecrow's fear toxin. And he's like, and yeah. I am. And so I had to confront the thing that fear, I fear the most. And I thought it was really cool. I liked the way, even though there's a little, it's a little exposition heavy. I liked the way it worked within the story. And then I really liked that King, because I think King's a really smart writer. And I think what he kind of is doing in this arc is like, well, I'm going to go into the depths of Batman emotionally, but I can't really do that in the real world permanently because he's a property, he's an IP. I can't change him too much, but I can play around a lot in his dreams. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I agree with you. This arc went on too long, but this issue really, really clicked for me.
You know, the things that we saw between, you know, Batman and Catwoman here, the relationship, the love, you actually felt how much they loved and cared for each other. Mm-hmm. I did like that. I loved the artwork, man. Some of this art in these different costumes and these different, areas where they're just dancing, and it's really, really cool looking.
So the one of the things that we find out is that Batman, you know, he goes to great lengths to be the best there is at everything. And as we said before, he's not always the best at everything, but he tries to be prepared, like exposing himself to the different variations of Scarecrow's toxins and memorizing the effects of each one. Uh-huh. So his subconscious could sort of like recognize it.
Yeah. I buy it though, man. You know, it reminds me of the Grant Morrison Batman run. Remember where like he trained himself so fully that he even like created an alternate persona in case his main persona was driven mad. Like that's freaking Batman. So I was like, yeah, I'm on board, man. I'm all in. This is cool. I get it. Like, dose yourself with fear toxin Friday night. Cool. Go have fun.
Yeah. And it was kind of nice to see Bane and Thomas Wayne here.
We get to see a lot of them.
Cause we haven't. Yeah. Well, that is true.
Oh, I'm not even going to go
there.
But
we haven't had any. We've had all dreams, basically, except for the little crossover. We have all dreams, so we haven't really seen Bane. We have that missing piece of what we think happened, but we sort of get a better idea of where this is heading when you see the characterization between these two, I think, is spot on.
Well, I think there's a lot revealed, too, in the way they fight, which is really cool. Like Thomas Wayne is playing with him. And he's kind of toying with Bane in a way that Bruce Wayne would never, ever do. And there's like a cockiness to Thomas Wayne that I thought was kind of cool. I'm like, oh, this is what separates him from Bruce. And then when Bane, you know, rages out, gains the upper hand, Thomas just pulls a gun and it's like, hey, I'll kill you. Like there's not, I'm not my son, man. I will straight up shoot you. And I really liked that. There were some good lines in the sand here of like, we may have the same objective. And we may be working together, but don't for a minute think I'm my son. It was cool. There was a lot of characterization in that hot man on man action. Like there was a lot of character building in there.
No. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Oh man.
And
sorry, Joey.
I'm keeping my mouth shut. There were so many words in there that I could have used as a joke. I'm just keeping my mouth shut.
So they do have different motivations. It'd be interesting when we finally find out Thomas Wayne's we realize, you know, in that the button crossover, he told Batman, don't be Batman. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be Batman. So he's going to a lot to not have his son be Batman.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think he wants to kill him.
I almost think that this is kind of too far. Like, you know what I mean? I think there was a moment where I told Bill, you know, if you really wanted, you know, I think we even talked, I think Bill, you brought it up to me and you said, well, if he just didn't want Bruce to be Batman, why wouldn't he just go and get Selina to get back with him? And then boom, he's not Batman anymore because he'd be in love and want to go off and be with his wife. Right. So why would he go through this to this length to team up with Bane? And wrestle around with them half naked and why would you want to do, you know, I just don't understand why.
I think Thomas Wayne and Bane have the same goal. I think they are both trying to kill Batman. Like, I think Thomas Wayne is trying to kill, he's not trying to kill Bruce. He's trying to kill Batman. Mm-hmm.
He's trying to kill
Batman. Yeah, and I think he, because he was Batman himself in his own universe, I think he understands that, like, Selina wouldn't have been enough. And that's actually, I think, the resolution of this issue is when Bruce comes to that realization. Like, Selina would not have been enough. He wouldn't have stopped being Batman, and, you know, something would have happened along the way. And I think Thomas is like, the only way to do it is to burn it out of him. Like basically it's an exorcism. And he's like, I'm going to burn the Batman out of him. I'm going to kill him so that there's only Bruce left. And I think we all are reading it going, well, there never has been a Bruce left. So what's left when you kill Batman? So I love that part of it. I think it's great writing by King.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. That does. The one thing that when we get close to the end of this book, we find out that to beat this machine that's pumping this fear to give him all these nightmares, that the way you beat this is to have your greatest fear. In this issue, we get a little glimpse of possibly what's Batman's greatest fear, what he's afraid of. And I personally think, I don't know if this is right or not, but I personally think that, you know, it has to do with loving Selina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Loving Selina over loving his vow that he took when his parents were murdered. What do you all think about that?
I think love in general, right? Like loving something other than Batman, other than being Batman, or the goal that Batman, that he reaches as Batman. I think that could possibly be his greatest fear, you know, leaving it behind and moving on.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I mean, I think it's, you know, he died at like, what, 8 years old? Like, I mean, he watches his parents die, and it's kind of universally understood that his childhood dies in that moment, but he doesn't die because he keeps living. And so he's got to fill something, and he fills that void with Batman. And in the last issue you guys covered, the bachelorette party, remember Clark says to him, you hate that you have to be Batman, but you love being Batman. Yep. And I think he loves being Batman because it fills the void. It's the only thing that ever did. And if he lets something else fill it, if he lets Selina fill it, she could be taken away. Like, he could lose again, and he can't survive that. Like, it goes back to that I Am Suicide arc, you know, from like early on in King's run. Like, he can't survive that. There's like, he wouldn't. And actually, I don't think Gotham would survive it. I think if he lost again, he would take everybody with him. And so I think it is his greatest. I think his greatest fear is like, allowing anything like that back in his life, and even for a moment risking the crime alley moment again. So I loved it. I thought King really brought that home.
You know, in some of these previous nightmares, you see him and Selina interacting. Of course, it's not the real Selina, but biggest question is love. And can he still have the vow if he finds love? I don't know if he can, but it'd be interesting to find out.
And I'm curious where this all goes, because King has done, and you know, all of his artists that have been with him, they've done such a good job of building up Selina and Bruce's relationship that I don't want it to end. Like, I'm kind of hoping, like, they're not going to get married, and I don't need them to be married, whatever. But I kind of hope they're still dating later on. like, I hope, you know, around issue, I guess King is wrapping this run up in issue 100 or something around there. Like, I hope they're together at that point. I hope they're, you know, an item still, because I like them together. He's made them real enough to me that I like them together.
And you know, if you look back into history of Batman comics, you know, they have a relationship a lot.
Yeah.
Through the 80s and the New 52, when that came along, they sort of established a relationship.
A rooftop relationship.
Yeah.
they did some Bane and Thomas Wayne wrestling. Sorry, guys. You're like, last episode Sean's ever invited on.
that's okay.
This is the X-rated version.
So the one thing I wanted to add is the art in this book.
Oh, yeah.
Is pretty incredible.
Yeah, Paquette's amazing. I mean, he has like a really heavy line. Like, I don't know what it is about his line. It feels like it's inked twice or something. It's really a thick line. And I've always loved that about his art. And that moment when Bruce says, dance with me, and she says, like, ask again and don't make it a command. Their facial expressions, like, he's amazing. Like, he totally captures everything in that moment.
There's also a panel there where you see they're kind of standing there. You know, she's got her arm on his shoulder and he's holding the other hand. And on either side, it's her crying and him looking like he's very distraught just as well. man, the expression in the in these faces, you can almost feel how much they're hurting in this moment. This was great, great art.
Yeah, I agree. It's fantastic. I mean, I can't say enough about this issue. And anytime he's on a book, it's pretty exceptional, I do have to say.
No, it feels good to say something nice about Tom King. Like, I, you know, it's, yeah. And I'm not really being sarcastic. Like he is getting some very justifiable heat for the way, Heroes in Crisis is going. So I'm glad to be reminded of his work on Batman, because he is extremely talented and he's very fan friendly. Like, he's obviously a good dude. And so it's nice. I'm glad we get to say something nice about his work.
I do enjoy his Batman run.
To be fair, his Hero in Crisis isn't even over. Still have one issue left. So.
That better be one great issue.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll move on and we will head to topic of the week. Welcome to Topic of the Week, and our topic this week is top three Batman-related miniseries. And Sean, how about you go first?
All right, well, thank you, and thanks again for having me on and giving me a chance to just dig back through my long boxes. This was a blast. It was hard to narrow it down to three, but my third choice is, I think, the definitive Batgirl story. It's Batgirl Year One. And it's from 2003. It's written by Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon. And it is drawn beautifully by Marcos Martín. It is the story of, it's Batgirl's Year One. It's her origin. It starts at the very beginning where she wants to be a cop. And Jim Gordon actually laughs at her and tells her she doesn't meet the height requirement. And man, you don't make a redhead angry. She decides she's going to show her dad. She makes a Batgirl costume as a joke to make him mad, goes to a masquerade party, but ends up fighting off Killer Moth, and then chaos ensues, and we get to see some amazing first moments. We see her in the costume for the first time, fighting her first supervillain, meeting Dick Grayson, meeting Dinah Lance, Black Canary, who she'll later form Birds of Prey with. It's the definitive Batgirl story. I love Barbara Gordon as Batgirl. I loved her more as Oracle, but I love her as Batgirl, and I cannot recommend this story enough to any Batgirl fans.
Yeah, cool.
I agree. It's very good. I mean, if you think about it, there hasn't been a lot of stories in the last 30 years besides the New 52 where Barbara Gordon has been Batgirl. She's been Oracle for most of the time. And if somebody asked me, hey, I want to read some Batgirl, what would you pick? This is a story I would pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a perfect get to know Barbara Gordon, Batgirl. And I really liked a couple things in that story. And, you know, I really like that she went to the Justice Society to try to, you know, get Black Canary to help her to train. And she left a note. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Well, and I like too that one of my favorite touches in the mini is that Dick Grayson keeps coming back. Robin keeps coming back and he's flirting with her. And it's kind of a hint of their romance to come. But she thinks he's operating outside of Batman's permission. And he's giving her like a motorcycle and like batarangs. And she thinks he's helping her on the sly, but it's all under Batman's auspices. Like, Batman's effectively keeping an eye on her the entire time. And it's kind of a nice little parental moment for Bruce.
Yeah, I agree. Joey, what did you think?
Yeah, I think I didn't have a chance to read this book. And this was always one of those ones that I always kind of wanted to read and check out for myself. I mean, I always love a really good origin story. And when you do it right, you know, it can come out very well, very well done. I'm definitely excited to want to dive into this one. This one is definitely going to go on my list of must reads.
Very cool. So, Joey, what was your number three?
So my number three is going to be a book that I really always, always wanted to read. And I tried to get into this one. I've been so busy with work and so busy with so many different other things. I couldn't get into reading it all. And it is only just a few issues. I don't know why I couldn't read it all, but it is Batman Cacophony. You know, it is, you know, Kevin Smith's book, and he's got his buddy over there, Walt Flanagan, penciling the book. I always wanted to read it because I always been a big, huge fan of, you know, the Comic Book Man and all their podcasts. And for a long time, I listened to their podcast, listened to, you know, Ming and Mike's show, all that good stuff. And it always wanted to read this one. And this one's definitely on my list to check it out. And I read, good handful of it, and man, it was so good and intriguing. I really want to dive into this one so much more.
So I really like this mini. I was surprised when you picked it, only because so there's a follow up mini. Widening got Gyre. Yeah, it's from the poem. Like, and I always pronounce it wrong. Anyway, that mini is what I thought you meant when you recommended this, and I was like, really? Uh-huh. He's picking that because that is like a universally not loved mini.
And it never got finished.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's
right?
never finished. And it ends on like a ridiculous cliffhanger, like a brutal, oh my God, where does this go next cliffhanger? So I thought that was a story my mind went to. And then I realized like, no, he picked the one before it. And that is, you're right. It's a great mini. And it's most famous, I think, because it ends on, I think it's an 8-page discussion between Batman and the Joker.
Yes.
And the Joker's in the hospital. He's been caught and he's been actually gravely injured. And he's all doped up on psychotropics. And so Batman goes to him. He's like, hey, this is the one time I thought I could get you when you weren't, you know, the Joker, when you were like the most yourself. And they have a really interesting conversation. And I actually think it's one of the better written Bat moments probably in history. So it's a great recommendation. Yeah. And it's worth it alone because the Joker grows a beard in the hospital because, you know, they're not shaving him.
Yes.
And the Joker with the beard is the most freaking terrifying thing I've ever seen. So great choice.
That's the reason why I picked it, right? Because
it's a great
Joker
choice
with the beard.
and the other thing that we get in that book is this discussion between Jim Gordon about letting the Joker die. This is your perfect opportunity to let the Joker die.
Yeah. Wow.
And you know he's not going to cross that line, but it would be the perfect opportunity to get rid of him forever. And you know, you're in the same situation. Could you do the same thing?
I was angry. Yeah, I was hard. Like, let him die. Like I was actually angry. I was totally with Jim Gordon on this. You didn't injure him and you're not killing him. You're just maybe taking a long walk to the hospital. I was totally with Jim Gordon on it. And actually, coincidentally, it connects nicely to the Batman Who Laughs that we're going to cover later. Cause there's a similar moment.
Yeah. I think there's some kind of, I'm going to get into it a little bit better in my other books, but you guys know my picks. Do you guys see kind of a pattern going on with my picks of these minis? They all have a really good kind of Batman Joker moment. And it's just this awesome, like intriguing, you know, relationship that.
Yeah. That last discussion is, I think one of the best moments of in Batman Joker history. I think it's like, and people complain about the mini a little bit because Kevin Smith gets a little cute in a couple moments with the language. And he's got his Kevin Smith isms, you know, you either love it or you don't, but at the end of the day, he's a damn good writer. And that scene alone is worth the price of admission. And actually Walt Flanagan, for a guy who's not a comic book artist, that is a really well-drawn mini. So I love your recommendation.
Yeah. And I've actually met Walt Flanagan in person.
Cool.
I went to the comic shop like 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
And he was in there. Yeah. Pretty cool. He's not very talkative, though. You know, there's quite a few things Kevin Smith has done and never finished.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
What was it, the Daredevil Bullseye or something like that, or Bullseye?
I think that was only one issue.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And then he did it was Spider-Man Black Cat had a mini, and it was like the first two issues or three issues came out, and then the last issue didn't come out for like, I think it was like 2 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But he has his moments. He can be a really good writer. That like I was saying, the end of that Cacophony mini. That's a really cool moment.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I mean, you know, I went to reread some of these minis and like a couple of them I'm like better than some on my list. Because it's been so long since I read them. Like the Huntress, Batman Huntress, Cry for Blood. It's like, oh, I forgot how good that is.
Yeah, it's so good. In fact, as I was rereading them all too, I actually really lamented that I didn't pick Turning Points. I'm like, oh, this is like, this might be one of my favorite Batman stories ever. Yeah. That was really good.
So my number three book that I picked is Arkham Asylum Living Hell. It was written by Dan Slott, penciled by Ryan Sook, and the covers were actually done by Eric Powell. And this was a six-issue miniseries that looked into the lives of, you know, Arkham's most famous residents and maybe not most famous residents, and then people that work there. And it centers around a character named Warren White, the Great White Shark, but it's Warren White before he turned into like a humanoid shark. And it's a great character study. Batman is in it, but he's not in it very much. But it's one of the great minis that I read, and I didn't even read it when it came out, but I read it several years later, and it's very good. Have you all read this one?
Yeah, I have. I read it when it came out. I remember seeing it, and it was, and there was no fanfare behind it. And this was before Dan Slott was a household name. This is way before his Spider-Man run or anything. Right. And in fact, it's one of the few things he did for DC. I think it might be the only time he's ever written Batman. And I remember it hit the stands. I didn't even know. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, oh, another Bat Mini. I don't need to buy this. But I picked it up and I leafed through it, and Ryan Sook's art, oh my God. He's amazing. And it grabbed me right away. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm buying this. And then the story ended up being, it's brilliant. It's effectively like businessman Donald Trump, or like, and I'm trying to think of another like very famous businessman who gets caught, you know, stealing funds and embezzling, and charms his way out of going to jail by claiming he was crazy. And the judge is like, oh, you're crazy? Okay, enjoy Arkham. And man, we get to, like Bill said, we get to watch him. He enters as this sort of smooth businessman who's used to getting his way and charming his way out of everything. And it ends with him literally and figuratively transfigured. It is some of the best Dan Slott writing I've ever read. And if you love Ryan Sook's art, it's a must buy. You have to check it out.
Oh, it's fantastic. And we actually get introduced to, you know, it's the first appearance of Jane Doe. And I love how she shows up in this book, because she impersonates, it's one of the doctors there, Ann Carver. And she negotiates a deal that he can go to a, you know, another prison to find out that Jane Doe murdered Carver and took her place. It was pretty entertaining, at least the way she showed up. But you have a man who's sane. He just embezzled people out of their money in a place where everybody else is insane. I can't imagine, you know, and as this miniseries went on, you got his perspective of, the one guy made a suggestion, hey, you should be somebody's helper, or somebody's this or somebody's that. And he was actually, Two-Face had injured his hands, and he was actually Two-Face's, you know, coin flipper, coin retriever.
You know? Well, it's the first story that has ever made Arkham terrifying. I mean, I read Arkham Asylum, you know, the Grant Morrison, Dave McKeon book. And I just found it odd. You know, like I didn't think it was scary. This was the first time where Arkham is terrifying and you don't want to go there.
No, you don't. Every day he would go to the medical center and he has all these injuries. Crazy.
Well, I like the first night in Arkham, he's rooming with somebody because of budget cuts. And the guy says to him, he's like, well, I'm going to take the top bunk. And the guy says to him, no, that's where the ghost of the girl I killed sleeps. it's like, oh my God.
Yes. So yeah, that was my number three.
It's a good choice.
Okay. So let's go to our number two. Sean, you're up.
All right. Well, I picked one that was near and dear to my heart. I started collecting in 1983. And so I actually got in on the ground floor when Jason Todd had just become Robin, but this is pre-crisis. So he was just a Dick Grayson copy. And then I was there when he became a jerk. I was there. I called in to kill him. I actually participated in Jason Todd's murder. Me and Rob Kelly from the Fire and Water Network. Yeah. It's the only other person I've ever met who called in. So I called in. And so when Tim Drake hit the scene, in the A Lonely Place of Dying in Batman, and New Titans, and he became Robin. He immediately became my favorite character in DC, and actually to this day is my favorite DC character. So I actually went with the 1991 Robin miniseries, which is the first of the three Robin miniseries where he actually goes out to the world to basically learn how to become Robin. And it's fantastic. It's written by Chuck Dixon. It's penciled by Tom Lyle, who was close to my heart because he drew the Will Payton Starman run, which was set in Phoenix. And that miniseries, it's so great, man. It's Tim being sent to Paris to learn a specific kind of Kung Fu that is dying out. And then within one issue, he gets involved with this gang that's running heroin. He meets Lady Shiva and he goes on this grand adventure where he learns more than he ever thought he would. And I was right at the right age when I read it, and it makes you feel like you are Tim Drake. Like you would question yourself but at the same time, you would like build these skills. And it's almost like an RPG game. You're like leveling up. And it's why everybody loves Tim Drake. It's why he is he is the greatest Robin. And so that is my recommendation, man. Robin, the first Robin mini, 1991.
Yeah. And if you read this series at the time, if you read this, he's your favorite Robin. He's your favorite Robin. I mean, you see, this is really the only Robin that's been fleshed out so much that you see him from the ground floor. I mean, who can say that they saw Dick Grayson from the ground floor? Not too many people. But here, he's my favorite Robin. I saw him. I read everything that he's ever been in. He's my favorite Robin. And this mini is the first of, you said three. And this one is fantastic. It leads up into the Robin series that went on for 100 plus issues.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like a really, really great book. I really am interested in checking this one out. I really love a good Robin story, man.
When it's got great covers by Brian Bolland, and it's like you said, Bill, we grew up with him. It's kind of the same thing with Wally West, right? I collected Barry Allen Flash books, but they were kind of stodgy and boring. Wally West is my Flash. I grew up with him. I grew up with Tim Drake. But Tim Drake will always be my favorite Robin. And I'm glad he's getting some new shine, you know, in DC with Brian Michael Bendis and Young Justice.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be, I don't know if you've heard, I sent Bill over something that he might be changing his look here pretty soon.
Yeah. New costume, new name from what I heard.
Yeah.
Which I don't really have a problem with that.
Yeah. It's interesting. He's been kind of missing in the last, what is it, handful of months.
If you're going to have all these different Robins and they're named Robin, you know, at some point they have to graduate to something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Following Nightwing's footsteps there.
I think I would have less trouble with it if his replacement weren't Damian. I mean, Damian is just a walking pimple. I just can't stand that character.
Or hate him. I don't think there's any.
Really?
I'm in the hate
camp. His arrogance.
Oh, I can't stand him, and I especially can't stand him because he replaced Tim as Robin. Yeah, I'm totally cool with Tim getting a new name and a new outfit, and anything's going to be better than Red Robin because you can't hear that name without going yum at the end. And so that might be a local joke, Bill. I don't know if they have Red Robins.
They have those here.
Oh, they do. Okay. I had to pick that. I had to pick one of the Robin minis, and when I looked back, I thought, you know, this first one is really where you realize – he's just a kid trying to do his best and he doesn't want to let Batman down. And it's like, who can't relate to that? So that's my pick for number two.
Yep. That was a great one.
Cool.
So Joey, you're number two.
So my number two is one that I kind of read when it first came out. And this was around the time when I was getting myself back into collecting comic books. And this was one of the ones that I grabbed and I started collecting again. And it's Batman Europa. And Bill, I mean, I know we talked about this one on the last episode.
He justifiably lit into you for that, I got to say.
Yeah, he wanted to do favorite covers. He wanted to do like all three. Three out of four.
Yeah, yeah, man.
These, I do have to bring this up. Let me bring this up real quick since you're talking. We discussed doing favorite minis. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many times you texted me and said, can I do this issue? And I said, that's just one issue. That's not a mini.
You got to tell the whole story, though. You got to tell the whole story.
What's the whole
story? So we were going to first do one shots. And I was like, no, let's do minis. And then I started showing you pictures of all these one shots that I wanted to talk about.
I do have to tell you guys, being part of your text chain is like getting a front row to Abbott and Costello routines. Like, I was just watching the text fly by. Like Bill's like, okay, favorite mini, it's good. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I got it. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, you mean like Death in the Family? And Bill's like, not a mini. And you're like, Lonely Place of Dying, not a mini. And I was like, I'm like, are they just doing this to F with me? Like, what's going on right now? I don't understand.
Sometimes I do it. No, I definitely do it just to mess with Bill.
Welcome to my life. No. And the better thing is, this is the best part. Everybody, you're going to learn something about Joey right now. He texts me 40 minutes before we record and said, what books are we doing? What books are we doing?
I do it every episode.
Every episode.
And he's like, again, really? You're not telling me you didn't read these, right? I'm like, no, as I'm like flipping through really quickly reading them. No, I've read them, Bill. I've read them.
Okay, get back to number two.
I picked Batman Year Robot. I mean, I love the colors. The first book really caught my eye because, you know, Jim Lee, you know what I mean? Awesome, awesome cover. Great, great stuff. And I like my last book. And there's always something that kind of intrigued me about Batman and Joker's relationship. But this one kind of follows Batman and Joker, and they both kind of get, you know, they're poisoned and they're kind of going through this. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, you're kind of connected because, you know, like that one story where you're connected. You got some kind of device around your neck, but you can't be too far apart or else you'll like blow up. This is kind of like one of those things, but they are poisoned and they end up at the end of it. Bane explains to them that they are they're each other's, antidote. So I really loved it because of this whole dynamic between, Bane, Joker, and Batman, and how they kind of have to work together, but they still kind of get on each other's nerves and hate each other. So I love that aspect.
I did think it was weird though when Bane told them that they were each other's antidotes, and now they had to naked wrestle. I was like, dude, Bane, what are you doing? Drop it.
I don't remember that happening.
Well, maybe that's only my copy. That's in my headcanon. I was pretty stoked when you picked Batman Europa because it was pretty recent. It wasn't one I went to automatically. And the art in that mini is fantastic. I think it's Jim Lee on the first issue, but I think it's Giuseppe Camuncoli for the rest of it.
Yeah.
And the colors are beautiful. And I just really liked the novelty of a Batman story set in Europe, like a Batman story outside of Gotham. And I thought that was really cool. It was a really interesting take on Batman. It was, if you're looking for sort of a non-traditional Batman mini, that's a good one.
Yeah. This one was really intriguing when I first started picking it up, and it was one of the ones that got me into wanting to collect again.
Yeah, and I do have to say, I really like the twist, because at the end there, that they're each other's antidote, which I didn't see coming. I didn't know how it was going to end. And you never know sometimes when they do these minis, if they're like in continuity or out of continuity. So it was interesting. My number two is Batman the Cult. It was a 4-issue miniseries. It is written by Jim Starlin, illustrated by Bernie Wrightson. And it's a story that follows Deacon Blackfire and his band of homeless, I guess you say, followers who had kidnapped Batman and brainwash him. As soon as you get into the mini, at the beginning of each issue, you have like this dream, nightmare-type dream, and they're very stylized. The art is very stylized. It's a story that you haven't really seen before at that point in time. And I believe this was after The Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. And it sort of had that feeling for me. There's a scene in here where Batman has to use a gun. Not a real gun, but have you guys read this book?
Yeah, I read it when it came out. Yeah. And that's, you hit the nail on the head with your placement of it, like kind of the timing of it. Cause, you know, Batman and Detective for a lot of the 80s were just kind of regular superhero books.
Yes.
And they weren't actually great sellers. People forget there was a time when Batman wasn't a great seller. And then Dark Knight Returns hit, Year One hits, and Batman, you know, Death in the Family, Batman becomes, and then, you know, Batman 89, obviously the movie, Batman becomes like this big property. But what was happening at the time, which was so cool, and the cult always represents this to me, is DC kind of looked around and went, hey, this character is way more malleable than we're using him. Like he's got more to him. Let's do some funky stuff with him. Let's get some really cool creators. I mean, Bernie freaking Wrightson on Batman is like astounding. And then all of a sudden in pretty quick succession, we get Gotham by Gaslight, you know, yeah. Mike Mignola, yeah. And we start getting these really trippy alternative takes on Batman. And I think the cult starts that all. I think the cult is the moment where people realized, oh, this character's more than just, you know, pow punch, you know, or, you know, Gotham City. And that's the mini I always attribute to that, because Bernie Wrightson drawing Batman, I mean, I can't think of anything greater than that. It's amazing. It's a hauntingly good story.
Oh yeah. And he's perfect for this story.
Yeah. This has always been one of those ones that's on my list as well. It's like, there's so much that I want to read that I don't have so much time to read.
Get reading.
Right.
Seriously.
Right. Exactly. And when we were all kind of talking about this stuff, and we're actually kind of, oh, well, this is my pick and this is my pick. I was looking through these books and I was like, man, this is some great stuff here. And man, there has been some awesome, awesome Batman stories, you know, back in the day and even nowadays, you know, people who have only known Batman within the last 5 to 10 years, there's some great stuff too. But man, in 80s and 90s stories of Batman, they were really awesome. I really love this stuff. You know, you got some iconic, you know, writers and artists and everything coming out of that era. So I think this is a great, great pick.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. This was a series that I got when it came out, and I don't know if it has a great love for this series. I'm not sure. It might be an underrated series.
Oh no, it shows up any like top 25 Batman story list. It's firmly in there.
Okay.
No, people love this story.
But you can find these books, these issues like minimal.
Yeah.
They're not like pricey books or anything like that. So I was just curious. I know it would be in my list, so. And I don't.
Yeah, it was a great. If you hadn't chosen it, I would have.
Yeah. Okay, let's head to our number one, Sean.
All right. Well, I'm kind of sticking with my non-traditional choices. I mean, I in picking my favorite Batman minis, I'm not actually picking a mini in which Batman is the star. And I think that's probably because my favorite Batman stories happen in his own series. But the second you guys proposed this as the top three segment for this episode, which I'm so happy about, by the way, the first thing that popped in my mind is Batman Hunter's Cry for Blood. This was a 2000 miniseries by Greg Rucka and art by Rick Burchett. And he's probably not a common or a household name for people, but if you know Mike Parabek or Ty Templeton, that style of sort of blocky Batman the Animated Series, you know, Paul Dini kind of art, that's exactly what it's like. And so it's Greg Rucka. I mean, you can't go wrong with Rucka on Batman. And it is a retelling of the Huntress's origin set in a storyline with her and Batman and actually Vic Sage, the Question. And so in it, mobsters around Gotham are showing up dead. They have arrows piercing through them. And, you know, she carries a crossbow. Batman assumes she killed them. He goes after her. She's definitely on rocky ground with the Bat family. And to be honest, you know, hadn't been portrayed as very sane in recent times. She ends up in over her head, almost dies. The Question saves her and then takes her on a really cool journey that, if you read the Question series in the 80s by Danny O'Neill and Dennis Cohen, completely mimics his journey. He takes her to Richard Dragon. Richard Dragon trains her how to be more at peace with herself. We learn her origin again. We sort of learn how much her life mimicked Batman's in some ways, but took a really serious turn away. And then she has to make a choice in the end involving the person responsible for the murder of her entire family. And she makes a choice that Batman would never make. And it is, I think pound for pound, it's the greatest Batman mini. I mean, obviously in my mind, but it is also the definitive Huntress story. And I have a real love for the Helena Bertinelli Huntress character, because I loved her in pre-crisis Helena Wayne when she was the daughter of Batman and Catwoman. And then post-crisis, she had this really cool, dark series by Joey Cavalieri and Joe Staten, of all people. And there's a really good Huntress podcast about it, actually. And it was a super dark book, and I loved it. And so I was really excited when this mini came out and kind of reinvented her, gave her some new energy, and made her an accepted part of the Bat family. In fact, after this, she would go on to join the Birds of Prey. So it is pound for pound one of my favorite Batman stories, Huntress stories. And it's dark. It is really dark. If you like The Godfather, you'd like this story. And weirdly, it's like The Godfather as interpreted by Batman, the animated series.
And if you thought Bruce Wayne had a sad story with his parents being murdered, hers, I think, is like five times as bad. Because her mother, father, and her brother gets taken out while they're eating dinner. It's very, you know, it could have been, she could have been walking down the same path as Bruce, but she kind of, the way that she was brought up, kind of goes in a different direction. And I like this direction, and the decision that she makes at the end of that book, Batman didn't like. The Question didn't like it either, and they were sort of having a relationship there.
Yeah, it looked like they were going to be a couple.
Yeah. So when she made that decision at the end there, and I'm not going to give it away, but you should read it. Definitely, this is one of the best interpretations of Huntress that I've read.
Yeah, Huntress is always a really good character. I'm a little bit younger than you guys, so I'm not too familiar with all these old school books, right? I grew up in the 90s, and obviously the 90s was the 90s, right? So I grew up with, you know, the animated series. I grew up with all the stuff. And I don't think I was really introduced to the Huntress until I was like a little bit older. But man, every time that I see this kind of character and her origin, man, it's such a cool origin. And like you said, this whole like mobster kind of background, kind of storyline. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And yeah, you should check out that Huntress podcast if you want more Huntress. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
So, Joey, what is your number one?
So, my number one is a little bit of a newer book. And it's a book that kind of just blew me out of the water when I read it. I read the first issue, and the first issue, I was like, man, I can't wait for the next one to come out. And I started collecting it. I don't think I ever kind of got them all, but I did pick up on like one or two. But man, it was such a good series, and it is Batman White Knight. It's another Batman Joker story, right? But this is where the Joker kind of transcends from being a villain to kind of like a good guy, because there's a situation where, you know, Batman, you know, does something to him, and he kind of becomes this, he calls himself the White Knight, and he, you know, is the beacon of light that Batman can't be to the people of Gotham. Batman thinks it's a long con, but you know, and you kind of throughout the whole story kind of question yourself, is it a long con, or is he really this good person now? It's such a great story. I love it.
I was excited when you picked it, because I will be honest with you, I picked it up on a whim. Actually kind of the same thing I had with an earlier mini, where I was like, you know, Sean Murphy, I liked, you know, Punk Rock Jesus, and I liked the Deep, or the Wake. No, the Wake. Sorry, the Deep with Scott Snyder. But I'm not super familiar with him. But I picked up the first issue, and technically it's an alternate universe where, you know, Batman's not quite as good as our Batman, and Joker's not quite as insane. But that transformation into Jack Napier, like they actually give him a name. It's the first time Joker's ever had a name. It's so cool to watch. And like you, I was like, oh, this is a con. He's going to crack at the end. But then the end, what, you know, the decision he makes at the end is like shockingly, you know, noble. And it's actually my favorite Harley Quinn story. Sean Murphy, does an explanation of why Harley Quinn went from like psychologist who made bad decisions to, you know, the Harley Quinn we kind of see today. And the explanation's kind of brilliant. And so it's a recent one, but I'd recommend it too. I think that was a great choice. And it was a huge hit, man. It was a stealth hit, because they put Murphy to work right away on White Knight 2. And apparently he's doing a whole universe of books.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you follow him on Twitter, he posts art, like work in progress, and he's doing a whole White Knight universe.
That's awesome.
That sounds awesome. That's awesome. I just hope it doesn't fall flat because, you know, so there's some times where you do a book and there's such a big hit and I don't want to say it's a cash grab, but you know, sometimes bigger companies, you know, they see a cash grab and they kind of go for, oh, well, let's do something more with this. But the universe that he created with this is awesome. Everybody's there. You got Nightwing, you got Batgirl, you even got Duke Thomas, who, you mm-hmm. know, now who we know as the Signal in Rebirth, you know, but but this is a different take. He's an ex-cop, but he kind of dropped out of the force because he didn't like the corruption inside the force. So kind of Jack Napier, and we know that name from, you know, Batman 89, right? Mm-hmm. And Jack Napier kind of, you know, becomes this, he calls himself the White Knight to the people of Backport, you know, and so, and they kind of look to him and they trust Duke Thomas's, opinion of this man to kind of bring them, justice and because the cops are so corrupt and there's no cops there. It's just it's a really, really cool, cool story.
When I heard that this writer is doing a story, you know, I'm a little skeptical because he's an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the artists are hit and miss. But if you think about it, some of these artists have turned into good writers because they're basically getting, you know, on the job training how to write.
Yeah. Okay.
When they get these scripts and everything. So I think this was fantastic. I love that it was Jack Napier. It's such a twist that I didn't see coming when I picked this up for the first time. So
yeah,
I really like this one.
Yeah, pretty cool. I also like the whole, you know, there's two Harley Quinns. You know, he mm-hmm. didn't even notice that one of them left, and you kind of look at it and they kind of talk about how that happened here, and they go a little bit deeper into it, and it kind of is perfect because, you know, the Joker is so involved with himself that he doesn't even notice that he picked up another woman off the street and kind of called her Harley Quinn and just ushered her into his life. And she just kind of went along with it. It's just everything about this book. This is why it's my number one, because every piece of every issue just kept me on edge, and I couldn't wait for the next one, and I had to read it. When I was reading it, I couldn't put it down. I read it, and like, I would wake up with my phone or my tablet on my chest because I was reading it as before bed, and I just could not put it down. It was just so amazing.
I look forward to the sequel, that's for sure.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
So, my number one is Batman Turning Points. It's a 5-issue limited series, and each issue is a certain point in the lives of Batman and Jim Gordon. The first issue is Batman Year One, and you see, you know, James Gordon. You see basically how he breaks up with his wife, how his wife moves out, and you see certain sides of the story and his relationship with Batman and Batman's relationship with Jim Gordon in regards to Year One. And then Issue Two is after the events. I think it's before Robin Year One, and Gordon meets Robin for the first time. And that's a pretty, I mean, it's basically a Jim Gordon mini. It's a character study of Jim Gordon. The next is Casualties of War, which is number 3, and that happens after the events of Batman the Killing Joke and Batman Death in the Family, and you find Batman and Gordon, how they're what happened to Barbara Gordon and Jason Todd, and how they're dealing with this grief. And then we got Nightfall. Commissioner realizes the man under the cape is not the original Batman, and he starts to lose trust in the Dark Knight. And then lastly, it's set after the events of No Man's Land. So it is a fantastic series. If you never heard of this or never read this, I highly recommend it. You will be a Jim Gordon fan after this.
I was really happy when you picked this because I did not buy this when it came out, but I picked it up a couple years later in like a pack for like 99 cents. It was like the entire mini for like 99 cents in like a discount bin. Nice. And I was like, hell, for 99 cents. Yeah, you can't pass up a Batman story for a buck. And then I was shell-shocked because I'm like, oh, wait, it's Greg Rucka, Ed Brubaker, Chuck Dixon. Like, it's like an amazing team.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is a Jim Gordon story. And I would say that mini, along with No Man's Land, are probably the two greatest Jim Gordon stories ever. Maybe Batman Year One as well. You could argue that's a Jim Gordon story. Yeah. And it was fantastic. My favorite moments in that mini are Jim Gordon first starts hearing that Robin is around and he's furious at Batman for endangering a child. And I was like, that is so, thank you. Like someone needs to have that reaction. Like someone needs to say to him, hey, it's weird that you have a little kid dressed in short green pants swinging around flying into bullets with you. And so that part was really cool. And then the Killing Joke one, there's such a good Barbara Gordon moment where Batman has stopped talking to Commissioner Gordon out of shame, basically. And Barbara Gordon goes to him and she's who are you to feel ashamed? Like I'm the one who was, shot and my dad was tortured. Like he needs his friend. Like stop being brooding, selfish, little boy whose parents died and go be a man, be a friend. And it was such a good mini. And it's definitely under the radar. I don't know a lot of people who talk about it, but you made a smart choice, man. Cause it is a definitive Jim Gordon story. It's awesome.
Yeah. Anytime that you have a really, really strong Jim Gordon and a Batman kind of counterpart, that provides something so, intriguing to the whole Batman mythos. You can't have a Batman. I always say, Batman isn't just Bruce Wayne. Batman is, Bruce Wayne and Jim Gordon. Batman is Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson or whatever Robin you want to insert there. He is multiple people. He is a team of multiple characters that create up this mythos. And I think anytime that we have a great Batman and Jim Gordon story, you always have to kind of read it and search it out because it's just this dynamic that you always have to have in order to have a Batman story. And I just love this kind of stuff.
I could have picked several different minis, some of the more popular ones that I really enjoyed, like Long Halloween. But I wanted to pick a couple that I've never talked about before or probably doesn't get talked about. So that's when it came down to my picks, that's how I came up with a few of mine. So yeah, that was our topic of the week. Pretty interesting this week. A lot of good minis. How about we go ahead and head back to the books?
All right, this issue that we're going to be talking about next here is The Batman Who Laughs Part 4. And you got Scott Snyder as the writer, Jock as the artist, David Barron on the colors, Sal Cipriano on the letters, Jock cover, Jenny Frison has a variant cover, Dave Wagles, assistant editor, Katie Kuber, editor, Jamie S. Rich, group editor, and Batman was created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. And since we have a really cool guest star on this episode, we're going to let him give us the synopsis of this book. Take it over, Sean.
All right. Well, where we left off in The Batman Who Laughs, if you remember, he has infected our Batmans, the Prime Universe Batman, with the Joker venom. Joker gas. And he is slowly becoming the Batman Who Laughs. He's staving it off as well as he can, but he is acting very suspiciously. We open with him in the Batcave, and he has fastened an eye mask similar to the one that the Batman Who Laughs wears. It's that iron bar with the spikes coming out. We learn that it actually has a function, that when he wears it, he can see dark matter. He can see pockets of dark matter. So he has built this in order to follow the Batman Who Laughs and see what he's up to. Alfred is worried about the mask. He's worried that Bruce has gone completely over. they have a really contentious moment, but Alfred and Bruce, their love for each other kind of saves the day. It kind of anchors Bruce back. Bruce dons the mask of the Batman Who Laughs and goes on to look for him. Meanwhile, the Batman Who Laughs and the Grim Knight, the Batman sort of Punisher hybrid we met in the one shot, which is very much worth checking out, that came out recently. They are holding Commissioner Gordon prisoner in the sewers of Gotham, and the Grim Knight wants to kill him because he is his nemesis from in his own universe. Commissioner Gordon was his nemesis, but the Batman Who Laughs has other plans. They wait out our Batman as Batman looks for these pockets of dark matter, eventually zooming in on the one where he knows the Batman Who Laughs will be. But we get a couple interesting side moments where he is using James Gordon Jr., the psychopath from the Black Mirror series that Scott Snyder and Jock did when they first took over Detective Comics. He's using him to help track down the Batman Who Laughs. And James Gordon Jr. actually says to Batman, hey, you know, if you kill him, then you've crossed a line you can't come back from. Do you have a safety net? And we see a meeting between Batman and the Joker that took place prior to this hunt, where Batman basically says to him, if I become the Batman Who Laughs, what will happen? And Joker says, I'll put you down. So there are some interesting character moments. It all culminates with Batman and the Batman Who Laughs at Blackgate Prison. And they have a confrontation with a surprise twist that I won't ruin. And it ends on a cliffhanger where it looks like the GCPD is about to end the Bat Universe forever. So that's it for the Bat Pod, actually. I think it's over now, right? It's as at the end of this cliffhanger, you guys have nothing left to do. But that's the Batman Who Laughs number 4. I would highly recommend it. I will tell you, I will confess fully, I had zero interest in this character in Metal. I had zero interest in this character coming out of Metal, but I trusted Scott Snyder and I trusted Jock enough to pick the first issue, and I do not regret it. It is the surprise book for me of the year. It's amazing.
I think I have to agree with that. And I think that's why every time that this book comes out, it has to be my pick. I am the same way. I was not interested in Metal. I did pick up like a couple of different number ones of that series and that run, whatever. And man, I wasn't too interested in reading it. It was just, you know, those crossovers and those. They got so much. It's kind of like, you know, in Marvel, what is it? They got War of the Realms going on. There's so many books to pick up. You can't get them all because it's like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. This was kind of that same thing. So I didn't really read any of the Metal too much. But when I read this one, I picked it up and I said, okay, I can be down with a little mini series of this character. Kind of cool. Let's check it out. And I picked it up, read it, and man, this is a really cool character. I always wondered about what the heck with that visor did, if you could see through, because it's just, you can't see through it, right? But they definitely gave us the answer here. You could see dark matter. You could see kind of what, and I love those panels where you do see, you know, you see the red, you see the different colors of what the dark matter metal actually helps you see. And it's really an interesting story to follow right now.
Yeah, I have to admit that I didn't want to read this. I know we talked about it before this came out, and it's like, yeah, I don't have any interest in this. I read Dark Knight Metal, and I can tell you, I didn't understand it. And I probably wasn't the only one. But we really liked the first issue, and from that point on, it's been building and building. I really wanted to know what that visor was all about. Because when he was making that visor, you know, last issue, I was like, how can he see out of this thing? But I'm glad we got an explanation as far as that goes. But the moment that's so powerful for me, and Scott Snyder gets Batman and Alfred. He gets them. There was a lot of character moments in the New 52 that I thought he did an excellent job with. Here, where Batman is out of control, and I tell you what, Alfred whipped his butt. Big time. Yep. But you have that tender moment after that. You know, Alfred is always the protector, always looking out for him. It's like father and son. That's their relationship.
Yeah, that's the most powerful moment in the book. I mean, Alfred will not give up on Bruce, and it anchors him. It like brings him back. And I like that moment a lot because I like a little more human Bruce. I like my Batman with a little humanity, which is actually why I've liked Tom King's run in, on Batman. And that was such a good moment. And it's so nicely juxtaposed to just the sheer anger of the Batman who laughs. So yeah, it's really good. I don't know how to describe to people because it seems like a silly cash grab, Joey, kind of like you were saying earlier. It just seems like something they were doing for the money. But, you know, luckily Scott Snyder had kind of earned so much cred with me that I was like, yeah, I'll pick this up. And I'm glad I did.
Yes. I think same here. You know, before I started getting back into collecting, I didn't really hear too much of who Scott Snyder was. But when I got introduced to his books, I got introduced through Witches, which is, you know.
Oh, yeah, from Vertigo?
Read that book.
Or is it Image? Sorry.
Image, yeah. Isn't it? I think it's Image. But man, that book was awesome. And I really loved that book and his style in there. It was really cool. And when I heard he was doing, I knew he was doing Batman, but I didn't really follow him when he was doing the new 52 stuff. So when I heard that he was going to be doing Metal again and then this stuff, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll jump on and check it out. It was really awesome. I quite enjoyed this. And man, just like you said, he gained my trust with this stuff. And it's really awesome. I really love this mini, man. This is really cool stuff here.
Yeah, but I have a fear, though. In this particular book. And I fear for Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
Because he's getting attacked by those little, the Batman who laughs Robin creatures. Those
Jokerized Robins.
Yeah.
Well, those things.
He looks like he's losing a couple fingers.
Oh, yeah. And those things freak me out, man. Like, did he just go into a random daycare and like slip Joker serum into the formula? Because there are a lot of those little kids, man. There's like there's a gymboree somewhere that's missing a class because there's just a bunch of little psycho Robins. And yeah, you're right. It looks like they're eating his fingers and shoulders. And I'm like, man, poor Jim Gordon. This guy's been through enough.
Hey, man, that's a day in the life of Joey over here with my kids.
It's what it's like having kids.
So do you think these two characters, the Batman who laughs and the Grim Knight, I know the Batman who laughs is going to come out of this miniseries and still be in the DC universe. Do you think the Grim Knight is going to make it?
Yeah, I think they stumbled over Batman meets the Punisher, right? And they're like, oh, this is gold. Like,
yeah.
The one thing I hope they realize is these are characters best used in really small doses. Like I would love to see both these characters go away for a while after this mini and not be a cash grab, not be the villain of the week. And cause it diminishes it and only come out in really moving and effective stories. Cause they're Snyder and Jock have turned these sort of cardboard cutouts into great characters. I just would hate to see that, you know, kind of fade with overuse. So I do think they stick around. I do think they're great finds. I just hope, you know, I hope they're used with moderation, which is not a word comic book companies usually understand.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest fear of everybody right now, right? And I think that's probably one of those big fears that I had when I first heard, oh man, they're going to be doing a Batman Who Laughs mini. Great. That means they're going to start doing it ongoing. And then great. The ongoing is going to just be horrible and it's not going to be as good. And then all this negative connotation around it and all that stuff, right? I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, use it in moderation. Sometimes longer and ongoing is not the best for a character. I think this Grim Knight, I think that one shot was awesome, but did they do the one shot to kind of test the waters there a little bit to see, oh, well, let's see if this one kind of can, you know, gain some speed here and can we create something out of this one too?
Yeah, I think they were trying to flesh out Grim Knight's story and they didn't have enough issues to do that. So that's why they stuck that one shot. I don't know if it was ever going to be an ongoing with either one of these characters, but I know you're going to definitely see the Batman Who Laughs coming up in, what is it, Villains Month?
Yeah, Year of the Villain.
Year or something. Yeah, Year of the Villain. So, yeah. And the art. Does anybody draw a creepier
Joker, the Batman who laughs, than Jock.
Yeah, right.
He's amazing. Like, he is. It's so funny because I think of him primarily as a cover artist because, you know, he does. I mean, he's phenomenal covers. Like, he's I bought his cover of Detective 1000. But I forget that he did, like, The Losers for Vertigo years ago. And, you know, he did, like, Green Arrow year one. And he did, you know, Black Mirror, that arc with Scott Snyder on Batman. And it's so nice to see him on interiors again. Because, like, it's being in a Jock comic is like being in the Matrix. It's like it's always night. It's always raining, right? Like, it just feels dark and wet all the time. And, it, you know, and it feels just really sinister all the time. And so I'm so excited by it. And again, you know, for people who are like, oh, this is a stupid character, why would they give him a mini? Just trust in Scott Snyder. Cause, you know, look, if after this we get, you know, the Batman Who Laughs Summer Fun special, or, you know, we get, you know, Road Tripping with Jason Todd and the Grim Knight, then yeah, it's all stupid and pointless. But what they're doing now is working really well.
I do have to say that one panel there when you see Batman and Alfred having their fight there, and you kind of get this close up of Bruce's face there. And he's got it around, like, it almost looks like his eyes are kind of cracking around, and he's got these red eyes, and one is just bloodshot, and one is really beady. And that close up of that is such a great, great panel. The way he portrays these characters, and it's really, really great stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So was there anything else anybody wanted to add?
No, I just, again, a very, very pleasant surprise.
I agree.
I don't know, Bill, does this make you want to have one of those visors for yourself?
I don't think so. What do I need to see dark matter for? Maybe it would help me find, you know, it could be the new co-host finder.
There you go. Hey, you got a guest star over here you can probably ask.
Or maybe when I look at you and we're on, you know, FaceTime, like we usually record, the beard goes away.
Yeah, no. Hey, I did earlier today. I told you, you know what? I'll shave my beard if you grow one for 6 months.
Yeah, nobody wants to see that.
I grew a beard out, but I look like Joker with a beard. I look like the Joker from the end of of Cacophony. It doesn't look good. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, that's me. So we'll go ahead and head to Stump the Co-host.
It's time for the Batpod Stump the Co-host segment. Stay tuned while Bill attempts to stump Joey.
Welcome to Stump the Co-host, and we have a good Stump the Co-host for you this week. Are you ready?
I'm definitely ready.
Oh, you're definitely ready. You studied.
Yes, I studied. After you got you mad prepared. At me and told me to study.
Yes, I did. That's the truth. So, tonight's topic is, there's always a topic. Tonight's topic is Robin, and I know your Robins. Am I correct?
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Our first question is, and of course, there's cash and prizes at the end if you get both questions right.
All right. I want a big payout.
Okay, we'll see about that. Our first question is, who killed Dick Grayson's parents?
Oh, right.
Was it A, Two-Face?
Okay.
B, Tony Zucco? C, Carmine Falcone?
Oh, man.
Or D, Silver Surfer?
Oh, that's a good one. All right.
You want me to repeat those?
Let's go ahead and repeat it for the listeners.
Okay. Who killed Dick Grayson's parents? A, Two-Face, B, Tony Zucco, C, Carmine Falcone, or D, the Silver Surfer?
All right. I want to say Silver Surfer. No, just kidding. let's say, I think it was Tony Zucco, wasn't it? I think I'm going to go with Zucco.
Zucco, that is correct.
Yeah, got it.
Tony Zucco.
Got it. I'm winning, Bill. I'm going to win. I'm going to get it.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Second question. Who killed Tim Drake's father?
Oh.
Who killed Tim Drake's father?
Was it A,
the trickster? Was it B, the weather wizard? Or was it C, Captain Boomerang? Or D, Captain Cold?
All right.
This is an easy one. An easy one. A, the trickster. B, weather wizard. C, Captain Boomerang. And D, Captain Cold.
I want to say trickster or Captain Boomerang.
Okay, you can only pick one. Come on, you know.
Man. I didn't really follow. Okay, let's say my first instinct, trickster. First instinct is probably wrong.
The trickster. If you said the trickster, you're incorrect, of course.
Man, I knew it.
It was C, Captain Boomerang.
I knew it. See, so I get points for saying his name at least, right?
And you know what story that's from?
No, I don't. I didn't really follow that storyline.
Identity Crisis. Brad Meltzer's Identity Crisis.
Yeah, I didn't.
So yeah, you were 1-for-2. You did not win the cash and prizes.
I should have went with the second one.
No, would you like to know what you would have won?
Let's go for it.
You would have won an opportunity to join the Flying Graysons.
All right.
Yes. You're a pretty in shape guy over there, right? You're drinking some diet soda or something.
No. I mean, it's
right?
Dad bod. And then I definitely do have the leotard in my closet, though. So I'm ready for it. I've been ready for years.
Okay, so you're not afraid of heights or anything?
No. Maybe.
Okay, because there's going to be no net.
Okay.
So if you're afraid of heights and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I need definitely no net.
I need a safety net.
I hear that they have... I told you it was a Dr. Pepper. I hear there's a big turnover with the Flying Graysons.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't last too long.
Is that a pun intended?
Yeah, probably. That was really awful. Yeah. Really bad. Really bad this week.
Hey, that was you this time. You were the one with the dad joke, not me.
So, let's head back to the book. Our last comic for tonight is Detective Comics 1002. Your writer is Peter J. Tomasi. Your penciler, Brad Walker. Your inker, Andrew Hennessy. Colorist, Nathan Fairburn. Letterer, Rob Lay. Cover, Walker, Hennessy, Fairburn. Variant cover, Mark Brooks. Assistant editor, Dave Wilgos. Editors Chris Conroy and Jamie S. Rich. And in this issue, Batman and Arkham Knight's battle ends in a standstill with the GCPD and innocent bystanders in harm's way. Damian goes on a solo mission to recover parts of the day bomb and gets taken by the Arkham Knight, who wants Damian to join his crusade. And we get an ending where Arkham Knight reveals who he is and has us wondering exactly who is the Arkham Knight.
Yeah, this one was good.
Yeah, really enjoyed this one. And you know, the way it ended last issue, you weren't sure where this was going to go because Batman is like full of arrows
right?
With the Arkham Knight's foot on his head.
Mm-hmm. Man, this fight, though, was just one battle, right? And to see the outcome, I always love a book where, you know, you pick up where they left off last issue. And it's in the, you know, you're not left kind of guessing what happened in between. But this one picks right up where it left off. They're fighting it out, and then they kind of get away from each other. But man, this is a good issue. Damian coming in.
Let's get to the dialogue at the beginning because it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
I just want to go over that, and that might lead to our thoughts of who the Arkham Knight is. But here, I'll read it right out of the first page. It says, This day bomb was just a prologue, Batman, a hint of what's to come. Mm. Your city, so incredibly arrogant. I don't recall anyone ever having to give it to you. You blinded the city, wrapped its eyes in darkness, and pushed it into a black pit. In my mind, Gotham's a victim, a kidnapped victim, and you're the kidnapper.
Wow.
So those are so. Yeah, it's
when I read that, man, that's like when you're watching a movie and there's this awesome part in the movie, you just want to jump out of your seat and like just be like, oh man, that was so awesome. This is what that did to me.
It feels like somebody that has it's personal.
Yeah, I can see that.
It feels as personal. It just doesn't feel like a random bad guy showing up and said, it's somebody that's either had an experience with Batman or something. I'm not quite sure.
There's definitely some kind of, I don't know if I want to say resentment, but there's definitely some kind of history there.
But whoever this guy is, he like saved innocence.
Yeah.
He took off out of there before, you know, the police were killed. He saved the one police officer with a gun accidentally went off.
He jumped in front of the bullets. Yeah. So he's kind of got that good guy vibe.
Well, he believes that he can be Gotham's protector, that Batman isn't really, Batman is the disease.
He's doing it wrong. Yeah. In his eyes.
Right. So, I mean, in the video game, Jason Todd was Arkham Knight. I don't see Jason Todd being this at all. But I'm curious if it's somebody he's worked with before or this is a new character completely. It's hard to say.
You know, there's this one panel here or these couple different panels here where you see Batman's eyes and Batman has his batarangs in between his fingers. And then you see Arkham Knight's eyes and he's got his weapons between his fingers. And I don't know the way you felt there, but when I looked at these two panels side by side to one another, and I sat there and thought to myself, did they train together at one point? Did Batman train him or vice versa or whatever it is that we were thinking in that moment? This is that one moment that I thought they have a connection, and I really want to know that connection.
Not to jump to the end, but when he reveals himself to Damian, Damian recognizes him.
It almost looks like it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. He knows exactly who it is. So it's a good possibility this is somebody we've known or somebody we've seen. I mean, there's also a possibility it's somebody that, you know, Batman, you know, trained or worked with or...
Yeah.
I wouldn't say something. He's one of the Robins, but it's hard to say who it is exactly.
And he's already got a Robin suit made up for him, all medieval-like.
And then,
it was well thought out.
We do have some humor in this issue. You know, when Arkham Knight leaves and he calls for the Batmobile.
Okay.
And Gordon has to help him get in the Batmobile. And he's like, you can barely stand. He says, go and plug yourself up. And he says, take this dang fool home.
The Batmobile
talks back and it says, taking fool home.
Yeah.
I thought that was...
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
But apparently the arrows didn't go in too deep, but these arrowheads penetrated his armor, which, as he said, the previous issue, something cut his rope. Somebody knows what equipment he's using. And then we have Damian in here again. It's so weird to see Damian in here because we just don't see him a lot in Batman or Detective.
So there's this, towards the end, there's a page here where Arkham Knight is standing and it looks like he's standing over Damian and he's speaking to Damian and it's right after Damian escapes and Arkham Knight finds him climbing out of, looks like the sewer or something like that. A manhole cover or something. And you see a couple of different rogues. You see the Mad Hatter. You see Hugo Strange.
Mr. Freeze. Clayface.
Yeah, you see Mr. Freeze, Clayface.
Dr. Phosphorus.
Yeah, you see all of them. So,
and Grundy.
This made me wonder. So are they all involved with Arkham Knight? What was your take on that?
Or is these like voices that are Damien is hearing in his head?
Mm. Okay.
Because he's like in shock now that when he came out of there that, you know, Arkham Knight is like one step ahead.
Yeah. It was definitely interesting. Made me think there. What's going on here? And then that's when he reveals himself.
And the face that he has is he's very not believing what he's seeing almost. So
yeah, it's definitely I definitely want to know who this is. And the way he says this, he's well, Robin, it seems like I'll need to try harder to convince you to join me. And then he takes off his helmet here.
I have a thought of who this might be.
Okay. Please share.
It could be that Damien's looking at himself.
Huh. Wow.
Because all these clones that were made of Damien.
Okay.
Now, a lot of the clones in previous issues in the Batman, this was done in Tomasi's Batman and Robin run, were kind of deformed.
Okay.
I'm just curious, maybe this is an older adult clone of Damien. It's just a thought, because I really don't have any idea.
That would be this really interesting.
Basically a guess. It would be interesting because they're basically the same person, so
right.
I can't imagine who else would be. That thought just kind of popped in my head while...
That would make a whole lot of sense.
I'm looking at these panels again. Yeah.
You know, he was trained by the same people who trained Batman. You know, he trained with Batman. He knows his every move. He knows what would penetrate his armor. He knows what would break his rope. He would definitely have the means to have a day bomb, right? Or had to have the kind of materials that would build one.
It's interesting because, you know, the Arkham Knight, he has his own castle, his own dungeon.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the Arkham Knight have a castle and a dungeon? Right. As I said, if this is a clone of Damien, what could have happened to make him retaliate against Batman like this?
Yeah.
What? It's not like they have any previous history. They don't have any training together. This would be basically a new character that's never really met Batman before. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to bring up, there was two things, actually. Number one was, I like how they use previous creators and names of different things. Like, they call Aparo Bay, Jim Aparo, who was an longtime artist of Batman. I like how they call different areas with a creator's names. So I do like that. And the art in this, the art is awesome. The best thing about the art for me personally, I love Batman's eye slits.
Yeah.
You know how they're a little bit narrower?
Uh-huh.
And they almost look like, you know, they're reflective, kind of white, but a little reflective, and
yeah,
he can see through. That's how personally I feel that his cowl is meant to look like, have these little slits, but you can't see his eyes, like in the movies.
And Damien has the same thing going on with his mask as well, which is kind of cool. I do like that.
There are some cool underwater scenes when Damien's trying to retrieve part of this bomb.
Yeah, that's some great artwork there.
So, yeah, the art is just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, your theory would make sense why he's always got the upper hand, right? So, I like that. That's good.
Why is he trying to save Gotham? What personal connection does he have? That's the only thing my theory kind of doesn't make sense. It's more of a personal connection to Damien then. So, I really don't have any idea, but it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this book?
Yeah, how do you like that Robin suit that he's got sitting there chilling, waiting for him?
Yeah, he's like his little knight. Yeah,
it's pretty cool looking.
I just wonder if next issue we're going to have Robin putting that on.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
It's something that he saw that I don't know.
That would be interesting to see.
Yep, let's get ready and wrap it up here. We wanted to thank Sean for stepping in here for us and being on our show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It was a heck of a lot of fun having you on, man. That was pretty cool.
I really appreciate it, guys. I'm a big fan of the show. I love the fact that I've got a fellow Arizona podcaster, which is pretty awesome. We're going to have to get together soon, record together. And I just, thank you so much for letting me be on the show. And I, like I said, my, the stuff I record is, it tends to be in the world of Marvel, even though I'm a Marvel and DC guy. And so to get to dip into Batman and especially that top three topic, you know, getting to read 9 miniseries, I just, it was like, it totally, you know, cured my Batman Jones for a while. So thanks a lot. I really appreciate you letting me hang out. And and anytime you want a guest or anytime you need a moderator between your fights on text, I'm here to help. There you
go. That happens often. But no, before you get out of here, you want to tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm on the Pulp to Pixel podcast network. We have a few shows. We have Secret Wars and Beyond with me and my co-host Greg Arujo, where we cover every Secret Wars miniseries from Marvel. We cover the beautiful gem that is Volume 1 that everybody loves. We cover the, you know, lipstick on a pig that is Volume 2 that everybody justifiably hates. And we are going to get to Volume 3, the Jonathan Hickman and Esad Ribic run, which is amazing. We're taking a little break at the moment to prep for that because it's a lot of reading. And so we are covering Squadron Supreme, the amazing miniseries from Mark Gruenwald and Bob Hall. We also have What If Cast, which covers issues of What If from Marvel, which is a ton of fun. And we have a Welcome to Astro City show where we cover Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson's Astro City run. And yeah, just a lot of really fun shows. We tend to be more Marvel oriented. And that's just honestly because there are so many great DC podcasts. There's so many great. I mean, why am I covering Batman if you guys are covering Batman? I'm not going to do it as well as you. So cover Batman and let me enjoy listening. So, yeah. So thanks a lot again for having me. And if people, you know, enjoyed the show, then please head on over and check out our Secret Wars podcast.
Awesome. You do know.
Sounds good.
You do know that this was your little interview for your, you know, when Bill tries to get rid of me, right?
Well, I think he's thinking to himself, well, he's in Arizona like Joey. He's got a kid like Joey. He's got kids. He's got a beard like Joey. What the hell? Like, I think he's going to swap me out the way Joker swapped out Harley Quinn's in White Knight. He's just going to pretend the audience isn't going to
notice. He's just going to start calling you Joe.
He is. He's gonna be like, hey, Joey, we're podcasting. I'm like, Bill, whatever. Okay, I'll answer to it.
Yeah. No respect.
Oh, man. Yeah, man, it was fun. I appreciate you coming on. I definitely, yeah, I love listening to your guys' show. I'm not too, because I'm doing this podcast. I don't read too much Marvel anymore. So listening to your guys' show, it's almost like, you know, jumping myself back into that stuff. It's a really fun show. So if you guys haven't heard of them, go check out all their stuff. It's really fun. Especially if you love Marvel, man. Everybody loves Marvel nowadays, right? With all these crazy movies out now, you know, jump on this stuff and listen to these guys. They're great.
If you'd like to be a part of the Batpod, we have an email. Our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Also, you can send us an audio clip of that email. We'll play it right on the show.
And if you guys would like to get a hold of us at our bat phone, yes, we have a bat phone. That phone number is 410-449-0650. Again, the bat phone number is 410-449-0650.
And we are on Twitter. It's at PodBat. I am at GothamKnight13.
And I'm at JoeyGalvez84.
And to everybody that has retweeted us and liked our posts on Facebook and Twitter, we really appreciate it. So do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, man. You know, we talk about these books on the show and we talk about, you know, comic books and movies sometimes and all this good stuff, right? I do want to stress, you know, the one place that we can always go find these amazing works of art is a comic book shop, right? You go into a comic book shop and you walk in there and just have good fun. You know, we gotta get in there and we gotta get more people into the shops. I think that is the one thing that I kind of have this newfound, love for, is getting people who, you know, have never stepped into a comic book shop but would love to experience that for the first time. You know what I mean? Everybody's got these. We got these movies coming out, all these great comic book movies that people will go and see, stand in lines for hours on end, but they have never stepped one foot into a comic book shop, but they'll stand in line forever just to watch a comic book movie. How do we get people?
Yeah, and some of these comic shops are going out of business.
How do we get people, those people who already have their foot in the door, to get them actually to walk through that door? And I think if we...
Yeah, that's a good question.
I think if we encourage one another and do it in a manner of love and kindness and acceptance, you know, we can get more people to walk into a comic book shop and enjoy some books. That's my soapbox, Bill.
There you go. Stan's soapbox. So yeah, we should be back in 2 weeks to talk a few more comics, have some little Stump the Co-host, and a topic of the week. And if that's everything, we'll head out of here.
I think that's it.
Same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later. We'll be right back.